Global trade woes hit markets, so which currencies are now a safe haven? And a CO2 shortage has hit the British meat industry. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Now, yesterday, the difference between yields on the 2-year and 10-year Treasury notes was the smallest it's been since 2007, just before the American economy slipped into recession. And when that happens, it's seen as the best predictor of post-war recessions. Viraj Patel, a currency strategist at ING, explains what these factors could mean for the US dollar.
Expectations for US growth and the US economic outlook has not really adjusted to a scenario of a global trade war. We have seen that adjustment take place in countries like Europe, in countries like China. The next big move that we expect to see is potentially, if this were to escalate, markets will adjust their expectations over the US economic outlook. We may see some of the steam taken out of the dollar, which has strengthened over the past couple of months.
You said in a note this morning that the US dollar's role as a safe haven shouldn't be overstated, and that it may even be time to, quote, ditch the dollar. Where should investors be looking?
The Japanese yen, we expect that to exhibit its natural safe haven characteristics, as it has done typically when stock markets go through a downturn. But equally, the euro, despite what we've seen over the past couple of months, we would expect the euro to also be a safe haven currency. Both of these currencies have large external surpluses, good favorable current account dynamics, and in effect, that makes them preferred safe haven destinations.
Even though they have their own problems, for example, Brexit and trade with the euro?
In an environment where global trade wars manages to take stock markets down materially, I think it's back to sort of fundamentals, back to basics, back to safety.
Let's do the numbers. China's Shanghai Composite Index is officially in bear market territory. That's a 20% drop from its January high. European markets are nudging higher a day after London's FTSE 100 saw its biggest one-day decline in a year. Now, an international cost of living survey for expats is out today, with Hong Kong top of the list. Michael Grover is a global mobility specialist at Mercer.
That ranges from things like groceries in the supermarket, to the cost of petrol at the pump, but also rental property prices in areas popular with expats.
So Hong Kong, number one.
Hong Kong is famous for high property prices. And some of the other cities in the top 10 are also in Asia. So Shanghai has entered the top 10 this year, but also cities that perhaps listeners would be expecting to be in there, like Singapore and Tokyo, can also be found in the top 10.
Is this a marker that, you know, these economies are booming, therefore lots of people are living there, therefore they are expensive, or is there other stuff at play here?
So growing economies in key cities is certainly a big reason for price increases. But we also have to be mindful that we're looking at an expat market basket here.
When you say that, I'm thinking about, you know, housewives in Delhi on the lookout for good feta cheese and strange things like that that you wouldn't get, you know, in a local household. But never mind that. What's the cheapest place in the world for expats?
Well, the cheapest place in the world is actually Tashkent in Uzbekistan. And that is also the city that has seen the biggest drop in our rankings this year. So it dropped 86 points due to the devaluation of the local currency against the US dollar. But on the other extreme, the largest increase can be seen in many Western European locations as a result of the stronger euro, but also as a result of increased property prices due to companies looking to relocate to make sure that they're still in the single market after the UK leaves the EU. So, for example, we've seen strong property prices in places like Dublin and Frankfurt.
Michael Grover. Now, last week, we mentioned a kind of ha-ha story that's turned pretty serious about the UK and Europe running out of the stuff that makes your sodas fizz. Carbon dioxide gas is a byproduct of ammonia production. It's bottled and sold to drink makers, but turns out it's also used for loads of other food products. Today, a major Scottish slaughterhouse is closing because it's run out of CO2. The BBC's Adam Curtley explains.
It's used in an awful lot of things. For example, when you buy those pre-packed salads in bags, they've got CO2 in them to keep their shelf life longer. Meat that you buy, they're chilled by it. You get deliveries from the supermarket to your home, and that freezer is again powered by CO2. When animals go to the abattoir for slaughter, the stun gun that stuns them before they're humanely slaughtered, it's CO2 that fires that.
And what about the pig farmers? Is it actually affecting day-to-day operations now?
It is now, and it applies to the chicken industry as well. Both require CO2 at the abattoir, or in the case of a chicken, at the chicken processing plant. Now, Scotland has a massive pig producer called Quality Pork Limited, about 6,000 pigs a week through its abattoir. Now, by some of the bigger American ones, that's maybe not big, but it's a lot for the UK, and it's running out of CO2. So it's got a sister plant in England, and it can send some of those pigs down there, but that English plant is also running a bit short now. So there is an animal welfare issue here, let alone the expense of keeping an animal alive longer than you've planned to, because these things are businesses and margins are very tight.
Do we have any idea when this CO2 shortage could be resolved?
No, is the answer. Three of the four UK ammonia plants are shut for maintenance. Three out of four is a lot when demand is so high for CO2. They have said one of them may come on stream again next week. That's in only half capacity, though. And of course, it'll take time to resupply all of these industries with the CO2. They've got to deliver it. So that's going to be quite a long-term thing as well.
Adam Kirtley there. Finally, a story just breaking. GE, the storied US conglomerate booted from the Dow last week, is planning to spin off its healthcare businesses and ownership of oil services company Baker Hughes, according to the Wall Street Journal. Shares are poised to open up nearly 2%. Don't forget, grab our podcast wherever you get yours. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.